Diss tracks are one of the most powerful weapons in the rap game that can change the industry overnight. Their deadly potential has been proven time and time again, most recently with Kendrick's chart-topping hit, Not Like Us, that tore an artist that many previously thought was untouchable into pieces. But before we talk about Kendrick's method of obliterating Drake, let's first reflect back to a few diss tracks that left their opponents straight up looking stupid. My name is Luesta, and these are Rap's wildest diss tracks. Imagine getting dissed so viciously that your entire career goes on pause. Well, that's exactly what happened in the scramble for the Queen of Rap crown between Nicki Minaj and Remy Ma. This beef, like many others do, started when Remy felt that Nicki was throwing subs at her, specifically with lines like this.
Tell that bitch with the crown to run it like Chris Brown. You won 3 rounds, I'ma need 100,000.
At the time, Remy thought this was disrespectful, especially from a younger rapper who was still making a name for herself. So she confronted her at the Playtime Is Over mixtape release party to tell her just that.
She had put out a freestyle, kind of like she was going at me. So I pulled up to her mixtape release by myself, pulled it to the side. I spilled her whole rhyme to her, like, yo, why would you do that? Like, you don't gotta do that. Like, yo, I listen to you, I fuck with you. Like, you'll get so much further. Like, especially if you, I'm like, people that's talented don't have to do that. I mean, you'll get so much further just, you know, keeping it a stack than trying to like come at me like just shitting. So like, I invited her to my birthday party. She came through with her peoples, whatever, whatever. And then I got locked up. So while I was locked up, you know, we had left on a good note. And when I came home, same thing. When I came home, she reached out, called my phone. We chopped it up. We had a long conversation. Like, I could show you, like, if people was to see the text messages that I still have, that we was having, like, they wouldn't even believe that it went bad. Like,
in and out of jail for crimes like shooting a friend in the colon over a missing $3,000, the door was left wide open for Nicki to become rap's next big female artist. And although she was seen respecting Remy in clips like this,
free Remy, shout out to all of the girls.
Once Remy got out, she got wind that Nicki was showing a lot less love behind the scenes.
The final straw is when somebody that is very credible, that we all know, and has sent, pretty much showed me messages that was from her, just talking so crazy and just like, just pretty much praying on my downfall. Like, yo, I can't even really say who it is, because say what it said, but I just couldn't believe it. Like, anytime anyone came to me and was telling me like, yo, this was said, I was like, nah, I don't believe it. Because we had a conversation. I told her like, yo, you're supposed to say you're the best. Say what I'm supposed to say I'm the best. And he's gonna try to put us against each other.
And she didn't believe her apprentice would do something so sinister until she saw it for herself.
When I saw it with my own eyes, I'm like, damn, how you hate on me? Or like, how could you try to wish bad on me?
This beef reached a whole other level upon the release of Sheether, a track where Remy borrowed the name and beat from Nas's infamous Jay-Z diss in an attempt to clap back at the cowardly hate. And even though we explored this song in a video on rap's most embarrassing beefs that I'll link at the end of this one, it doesn't take away from the level of savage Remy reached in this diss track. In 2017, she came at Nicki hard with some of the hardest bars she had ever received, starting with digs at her cheap BBL implants.
Now I don't think I understand how bad her ass got, the implants that she had put in her ass pop.
But this was the least of the personal jabs she threw at Nicki, as she accused her of getting lyrics from her ex and even took shots at her certified PDF file brother in true Kendrick fashion.
Guess who supports a child molester? Nicki Minaj. How you spend money to support a pedophile?
Being the first real pushback in her rise to the top, Nicki's career was effectively put on pause. While fans and critics awaited a response, experienced insiders like The Lox warned her of a hasty reply.
Like, if I was on Nicki's team, though, with that just being said, I'm just saying she got to use the approach of two different things. Like,
how much
you got to lose before you want to say you want to go to war? Because Remy's going to bring you to war.
Right.
So if you decide to go down that alley, you're going to have to be prepared to do that a lot. She's going to go hard, Remy. I don't think she could win this, so I think it would be smarter to fall back.
Ultimately, Nicki took the advice of her hip-hop mentors and sat this one out. And rather than engaging with this beef, she effectively put the beef on pause and went on a hiatus to let things cool off. This went on for years, with nothing more than vague subliminals back and forth until 2020, where Nicki went all in on her song No Frauds. In the collaboration with Drake and Wayne, the single featured a verse by Nicki dedicated entirely to her frenemy Remy, even referencing her 2008 legal case.
What type of bum bitch shoot a friend over a rat? What type of mother leave her one son over a stack?
She then really sealed the deal when she accused Remy of using a ghostwriter on Sheether, who was none other than her then husband, Papoose.
Tried to drop another one, you was itching to scrap. You exposed your ghostwriter, now you wish it was scrap.
That's when the battle went quiet, and for 3 years, not a single word was said. Suddenly, Remy came out to express her dissatisfaction with the situation as a whole, rather than continuing the fight.
It just bothers me that this record that I put out, where it's literally picking apart a female, went so viral, and every, you know, media outlet wants to talk about it and pick it up. I feel like we could have did that same thing working together. I would have liked it so much better that way.
Ever since this feud, Remy's career has yet to come back alight the way it had back then. This led some people to speculate whether she was paid to try to take Nicki down in the first place. While it may not have amounted to any significant shift, Sheether proved the power of the diss track, even against the biggest upcoming artists. And when it comes to taking down unstoppable foes in a painful, belittling manner, there's a little track in 1996 that remains unmatched in its viciousness. To this day, almost no rap compares to the golden standard set by Tupac's Hit 'Em Up. The track, which many hip-hop purists consider to be the recipe for the perfect lyrical roast, literally kicks off with this hook.
So I fucked your bitch, you fat motherfucker. Westside!
Beloved by even Biggie fans to this day, this track was disrespectful on a whole other level, going as far as to wish death on the entire Bad Boy crew. For anyone who doesn't know the long-standing beef between Pac and Biggie, just know that the two used to actually be close back in the day, and at one point, they were like any other pair of friends. They met while they were both on the verge of becoming extremely huge artists, and Biggie was even known to have slept on Tupac's couch from time to time. And while there were some minor clashes between Tupac and Biggie, their first major fallout occurred when they were set to collaborate on a project for another rapper who goes by the name of Lil Sean. And it was here where all of their problems came to light. On November 30th, 1994, Tupac arrived at the Quad Recording Studios in Times Square. As he prepared to go upstairs to meet Biggie and Diddy, he was ambushed in the lobby and shot 5 times, as reported by the New York Times. Amazingly, Tupac survived the attack, but suspected Biggie's involvement. There were plenty of reasons for why he believed this, with one example being that B.I.G. released a song titled Who Shot Ya shortly after this occurred.
Who shot ya? Separate the weak from the ops, leap the creek in Brooklyn Street.
Although Biggie would deny that the track was targeting Pac, and Puffy insisted that they showed Tupac nothing but love and concern, Shakur felt that the track's release confirmed Biggie's involvement in the incident, and became a turning point in their transition from friends to enemies. In an interview with Vibe, he clearly stated his opinion. Even if that song ain't about me, you should be like, I'm not putting that out because he might think it's about him. Feeling betrayed by his former best friend, Pac clapped back on Hit 'Em Up, even referencing the shooting as he made this declaration.
5 shots couldn't drop me, I took it in smell, now I'm about to set the record straight.
Once the track dropped, complete with allegations that Pac had smashed Biggie's wife, Faith Evans, the notorious B.I.G. was rightfully furious. And to give you some perspective on how big this song was, it was released 30 years ago and still managed to reach 700 million views on YouTube today. In an interview about the moment that it dropped, New York rapper Charlie Baltimore remembers the reaction from Biggie and Bad Boy when they first heard the song.
It was somebody's video shoot, I don't remember whose, and Puff was there, and I just remember, you know, Puff coming out. I think we pulled up, Puff came out, he was like, real somber looking, you know, and he was like, yo, I gotta play this record. And that's the first time, you know, we heard Hit 'Em Up. The whole mood just changed. You know, a video shoot was supposed to be upbeat, happy, whatever, and Big is just like, are you fucking serious right now? Like, seriously, this is what we doing? Like,
Hit 'Em Up quickly became a staple of the East versus West Coast rivalry that gripped 90s hip-hop, destroying any hope for peace. Even Pac's friend and label mate Snoop Dogg was weary of this.
Even when he played Hit 'Em Up the song, I didn't like the song.
Did you feel like it was too
like
much?
I didn't like it. Right. I didn't like the shit. Like, it wasn't like the shit to me. Like, it was you buying more problems, cuz. You're buying problems. Gangsters is everywhere. They make them everywhere.
While it may not have affected his 1996 death, Snoop was right that Pac's track knocked hip-hop off its feet and intensified the Coast Wars, a move that would later claim the life of Biggie Smalls. In fact, some people speculate that the track itself is cursed, as pretty much everyone involved in Hit 'Em Up is dead, including all the writers and producers. And sure enough, Pac, Outlaws members Hussein Fatal and Taki Gaddafi, and beatmaker Johnny J all passed shortly after its release. Hit 'Em Up was putting the lives of artists in danger, but our next rapper's hasty decision to diss the GOAT would leave his career on life support. A young MC out of Cleveland, Machine Gun Kelly grew up enamored with Eminem, always considering him one of his favorites. But when projects like Revival were coming out, he became concerned that his hero's best days were behind him.
What I think of the Marshall Mathers LP too, I'm scared of those two because that's my idol. I feel like he said all he has to say, you know what I'm saying? So of course I'm gonna love anything he does. I would hope people would be the same with me, but have I listened to it? No. Am I scared to listen to it? Yes. Do I want to listen to it? I wanted to listen to it the second I even heard he was recording it, but I'm like, scared to make that step, like, because I don't ever want to look at my idol like.
While these comments likely never hit M's radar, what eventually would were his comments on his daughter, starting with a tweet in 2012 where the then 22-year-old MGK was thirsting over Haley Jade. And I'll let you guys do the math on how old she was at the time, but rather than taking it back, he was then seen saying similar comments on platforms like Fuse, where he said,
"I'm not waiting until she's f***ing, I'll go now. I'm 23, dog. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm 23.
While he tried to maintain some respect here, he threw it all out the window when he came to believe he was banned from Shade 45, Eminem's radio, over the message.
"I'm my favorite rapper alive. Since my favorite rapper banned me from Shade 45, I wonder."
To clap back, he went in with rap legend Tech 9 on the track No Reason, where he spit this at the rap god.
"I pop cherries and pop stars and popsicles, it's not hard. Popped in on the top charts at the cop card, so remind y'all you just rap, you not god."
Up until this point, M had let everything slide, but once MGK expressed his frustration with M on the mic, it was time to get back. On Kamikaze's Not Alike, Slim had some fresh bars to serve.
"But next time you don't gotta use Tech 9 if you wanna come at me with a submachine gun. And I'm talking to you, but you already know who the fuck you are, Kelly."
Now, it may seem out of feels for Eminem to give a guy like MGK the time of day, but he later explains exactly what pushed him to the edge.
"Just for the record, the thing that was going on that he was saying about my daughter, I didn't even know about that until like literally like a year and a half later. It never hit my radar. The reason I dissed him is actually a lot more petty than that. The reason that I dissed him is because he got on, first he said that I'm the greatest rapper alive since my favorite rapper banned me from Shade 45 or whatever he said, right? Like I'm trying to hinder his career. So I don't give a fuck about your career. You think I actually fucking think about you? You know how many rappers that are better than you? Now I'm in this weird thing because I'm like, I gotta answer this motherfucker. As irrelevant as people say I am in hip hop, yeah. I make them bigger by getting into this thing where I'm like, I wanna destroy him, but I also don't wanna make him bigger."
MGK was blindsided by these scornful remarks from his hero, and he decided to get his revenge with the release of Rap Devil, the diss that nobody expected.
"Somebody grab some clippers. Beard is weird. Tough talk from a rapper paying millions for security a year."
Shockingly, MGK went at M in a compelling way, dogging everything from his facial hair to his age to the fact that he always sounds mad in his newer songs. It was a bold move that got him a lot of props.
"Rap god, I'm the rap devil. Come a bare face with a black shovel like the Armageddon when it's..."
"Hold on, MGK, you're not supposed to be coming like this. What's going on? Who put this devil juice in your water?"
But it didn't take long for Eminem to clap back with a brutality on Killshot, where he claimed not only to give MGK his entire platform, but swore that he'd break it down just as easily.
"Now I gotta cut back aim, yeah, bitch, pop champagne to this.
It's your moment, this is it, as big as you're gonna get, so enjoy it. Had to give you a career to destroy it."
Eminem refused to hold back here, and that should be the end of the story, right? But Rap Devil was compelling because, in a rare instance, it made people question if Eminem had been defeated.
"I thought Rap Devil was better than Killshot. I mean, I guess I'm in the minority because people been giving me flack for that.
Killshot was a leg shot. Rap Devil, we're talking about facts. You want to talk about man buns? Answer the facts.
I think people.
You want to talk about a hairstyle I wore for a movie? A blockbuster movie and a 10-episode Showtime series called Roadies? I'm an actor, homie. How disconnected are you? You call me a mumble rapper? Oh."
Even though MGK put up a worthy battle with his former hero, he has since changed his entire style and has barely touched rap ever since. It just goes to show the danger of coming after the rap god. Now MGK makes sad boy punk music, don't mess with Shady. Only Eminem could diss a rapper so hard that they change genres. Slim Shady has always been prolific in the art of war, and his protege 50 Cent has inherited that trait in his ability to shake the game with ruthless diss tracks. So much so that in 1999, he stepped onto the scene with How to Rob, a song so vicious that he made an enemy out of everyone right away. Most notably, his long-standing rival, Jay-Z. He really exploded into the game like Kendrick would eventually do on his infamous Control verse, and you can learn more about that and Dot's other savage moments in our recent video, but on the now legendary record, 50 details how he'd stick up the biggest artist in the game, suggesting that he was ready to come for anybody in his rise to the top, including Hove.
What Jigga just sold, like 4 milli, got something to live for. Don't want a nigga putting foe through that Bentley coupe.
Hip-hop culture doesn't let that kind of talk fly, and suddenly, everyone was talking about this Curtis Jackson kid. His musical debut put pressure on long-standing legends to respond, which includes Jay-Z, who showed off a new track at a Summer Jam performance that same year, where he took a jab at 50.
I'm about dollars, who the fuck is 50?
With all the mainstream attention his diss got him, 50 looks back at this time as a gamble, but a successful one at that.
Some of the biggest ones, including Jay-Z, Big Pun, and Wu-Tang, had responses for me, which was exactly what I hoped for. Columbia snatched up the song and put it on the Into Deep soundtrack, which exposed me to a wider audience. Everything was going according to my plan, but I still learned a valuable lesson with How to Rob. People always respond to a competitor. When you're viewed as someone who's going to run into the fray, as opposed to running from it, you'll always have eyes on you.
Despite a short lull in his career after infamously being shot 9 times, 50 would resurface once again just a few years later. Once he got signed with Dr. Dre and Shady, Jay-Z knew exactly what was coming.
Bleak beans, everybody was in there, and I was like, man, I'm telling you, man, y'all better, y'all got a chance right now, just flood it, put out a lot of music, mm-hmm. because 50 Cent is coming. Mm-hmm. 4 months later, in the club hit, and it was over. Right. It was just like, okay, now everybody got to sit on the sidelines and wait this tide to wave out.
Using diss tracks as a marketing ploy can be an ingenious idea, as we saw with 50 Cent's successful entrance into the rap game. But for his other mentor, Dr. Dre, he and the rest of NWA set their sights too far, flying too close to the sun like Icarus, and feeling the burn of a simply superior spitter. In the late 90s, Ice Cube was one of NWA's greatest assets, even ghostwriting for Eazy-E and Dr. Dre, but after a financial dispute, he split to fly solo while the other artists moved forward as a trio. Hurt by his departure, the group attempted to undermine him with a few lines off of 100 Miles and Runnin', and continued to refer to the former member as infamous traitor Benedict Arnold.
For them to diss me on their EP, 100 Miles and Running, I kind of threw a little jab with Jackin' for Beats at the end, mm-hmm. and then they came with another couple little disses. I said, okay, man, I'm tired of this. You know what I mean? I'm going to end this real quick, or we're going to set it all the way off. So that's when I wrote No Vaseline, recorded it. I put it on that Cinderfella track, you know what I mean? That Dana Dane track, Cinderfella. You know, we flipped it, and it became a smash.
Hey, yo, Drake, stick to producing, calling me on the clock. You Benedict, Eazy-E saw your ass and went in it quick.
They were beaten into submission to such an extent that DJ Yella admitted they couldn't even be mad about it, which might be cap.
That's the thing about it. Nobody really got mad. Okay, he got us on that one. That's all. I even told Cuba this a couple of months ago. I said, you got us.
Right.
You know, that's it.
Given the sheer savagery in some of Ice Cube's lines, it seemed like making amends with his former group was completely off the table. I mean, it literally killed one of the most famous groups in hip-hop, as they were never heard from again after this diss tore them apart in a matter of minutes. But what would eventually restore their bonds was time, of course, and their collaboration on a documentary of their career. At that point, the older and more mature men could let things go.
But when we got back together, it's like, really, we didn't even talk about it. It wasn't like we was in a room like, man, you said this, and nah, but you said that. We just didn't talk about it. It's just nobody talked about it. It was like, yo, let's get back together and do this. It's like a family argument with everybody throwing stuff, fighting, and then the next day, it's like we all going out to kick it or something, nobody mentioning the day before. So that's how it went down. We just never really tripped off of it.
Even though things have been patched up between them all, Ice Cube remains proud of No Vaseline as the king of all disses, and rightfully so. One-on-One Will Never Beat Me Against 4, plus Jerry Heller. Murder the Track killed the group, game over. However, if we're talking about game over, nothing compares to what Kendrick's Not Like Us did to his rivalry with Drake.
Fight is over!
Wait, where we landing? Oh, we landed at
Atlanta,
Burbank.
Oh, no.
minor.
Stop it! No!
This nigga black! Oh my God! He got the hopscotch!
Certified lover boy, certified pedophiles. Wop, 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 wop! That's so much, y'all the liar.
Ah!
He a fan, he a fan.
Oh my God, oh my God, no, 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 no.
Not Like Us was Kendrick Lamar's third official diss track towards Drake in their ongoing feud that spanned for nearly a decade.
It's just a whole nother dynamic. I can't see myself going bar for bar with Drake. You know, we're two different type of artists, you dig what I'm
saying? You eat Drake. I've argued that in many a circle.
Now, there have been countless videos made about this beef and how it came to surface that are nearly 2 to 3 hours long. So, I won't go into detail on how their beef started. Instead, for this section, I want to focus solely on the effect that Not Like Us had, as it was easily the biggest diss track to emerge from the battle. And when it comes to Not Like Us, you could really break it down into three layers. The track itself, the performance Kendrick did with the song at the Ken and Friends pop-out show, and the music video, as they're all essential in understanding just how badly it really fucked up Drake. For one, the beat was produced by DJ Mustard, a famous LA producer who worked with the likes of Roddy Ricch, YG, Drake himself, among others, and claimed that it only took 30 minutes to produce the beat.
It took me approximately 30 minutes to make that beat, and I didn't know he was gonna gas that beat like that. That's it.
This is important because during their beef, Kendrick didn't take the fact that Drake was disrespecting the West Coast lightly at all. With Drake buying Tupac's ring, using AI voices of Pac and Snoop on his tailor-made freestyle diss, as well as claiming Kendrick doesn't do anything for his hometown of Compton.
You just acting like an activist, it's make-believe. Don't even go back to your hood and plant no money tree.
Kendrick wanted to make it very clear that he was going all in on the West Coast vibe.
Oh, so y'all ain't gonna let nobody disrespect the West Coast, huh? Oh, y'all ain't gonna let nobody mock and imitate our legends, huh?
Some fans even felt that Kendrick took Draco the Ruler's flow for his song, which is a well-known West Coast artist who passed away in 2021. But while that's all speculation, what wasn't was the lyrics to the song. Throughout the duration of the track, Kendrick delivers a powerful and scathing critique of Drake. From calling out his crew members like Party Next Door for doing drugs, to questioning Drake's friend Baka Not Nice for having a quote-unquote weird case.
Baka's got a weird case.
Why is he around?
Why is he around? It's such a just simple question.
Along with calling him a colonizer for his slavery bars and using Atlanta artists for a quick cash grab.
Once upon a time, all of us was in chains. Homie still doubled down, calling us some slaves. You run to Atlanta when you need a few dollars. No, you're not a colleague, you're a fucking colonizer.
Every single bar in this song can be dissected and tied into something that has such a deeper meaning. In one bar, Kendrick even brings up a forgotten story that led people to thinking the legendary Nardwar was giving him secret information behind the scenes.
Fuck no Wayne girl, right? He was in jail. That's conniving. Then get his face tatted like a bitch.
Wait, hold on. He's talking about Wayne now? Did I miss that?
Conniving.
Oh, his girl? What the fuck? The drama. You know who's giving him all this fucking information? It's Nardwar. It has to be Nardwar.
The song is filled with crazy subliminals that tie crazily into each other. For example, the John Stockton line. In the beginning of the track, Kendrick makes a reference to passing a body like John Stockton, which, if you didn't know, is an NBA legend who played point guard for the Utah Jazz. What's interesting is that Stockton spent a large portion of his career playing alongside Karl Malone, which explains how he quote, passed the body. However, it can also have to do with Malone being notoriously known for impregnating a girl who was 5 years below the age of 18 in 1983, when Malone was 20 years old. This plays into the overall narrative that Kendrick was trying to create in his battle with Drake, as he aimed to paint the Six God as a certified PDF file for his strange connection to minors over the years.
Did any nigga talk to him and they in love? Just make sure you hide your little sister from him.
To top it all off, later in the track, Kendrick mentions that he has 10 diss tracks in stock, hence completing the Stock 10 reference. There are tons of other things I can mention about the track's lyrics, and these are really just tipping the iceberg. Then, on Juneteenth, Kendrick decided to take it a step further. Being that it was on Juneteenth, many thought that Kendrick was sending a subliminal message to Drake, being a colonizer, when he had a special concert where he performed all of the diss tracks aside from Meet the Grams, and it was insane. The pop-out featured tons of LA artists and celebrities, ranging from YG, Black Hippie, Roddy Ricch, DeMar DeRozan, Westbrook, and many, many more made appearances. But the most diabolical part of this concert was that Kendrick performed Not Like Us not once, not twice, not three times, but a total of six times. Bro really had an entire stadium calling him a predator.
Why you calling like a bitch, ain't you? Trying to strike a chord, and it's probably...
I actually went to this concert myself, and I'm telling you guys, the energy in the building was just something you cannot describe. During the performance, Kendrick sported a red sweater and jeans, which fans found out was a direct reference to Tupac's 1994 Source Awards outfit, which is another dig at Drake for disrespecting the legend. One thing interesting is that at one point, Kendrick claimed that the concert was not intended to hate Drake, but instead, it was simply to bring the West Coast together.
This shit ain't got nothing to do with no motherfucking song at this point. Ain't got nothing to do with no back and forth records. It got everything to do with this moment right here. That's what this shit was about. To bring all of us to motherfuck together, you know what I'm saying? That's what this shit is about.
But about 2 weeks later, Kendrick did something special on the 4th of July. A day that is known to celebrate the independence of the United States of America, Kendrick continued to play into the narrative that Drake was a colonizer from the day that he dropped the music video Alone. The video is full of crazy Easter eggs that left fans and critics alike depicting each of the scenes. The knock on the door in the beginning, the 17 push-ups with a picture on the wall, Kendrick crip walking over hopscotch, the sex trafficking crates that were black and white, the family dancing together, and the owl at the end, all had crazy deep meanings that led fans to come up with various theories. Today, the video sits at just over 70 million views. And speaking of numbers, this is where Kendrick really beat Drake at his own game. Not only did he make a smash hit that's been deemed as the song of the summer, and has become an anthem in clubs worldwide, the song has also broke record after record, and oddly enough, replacing Drake songs. On his response track, Drake dropped some absolute mid that's not even worth discussing, as he mainly played defense the entire time, as well as accusing Kendrick of the same old accusations that no one believes. To make matters worse, he then followed this up with a Hey There Delilah remix, and man, it was so bad.
This is not real, bro. This is not real.
Walk one Delilah, no, I'm late cause there's bad traffic.
Drake. No, it's real. No. No. No, ain't no way.
Some people even claimed it was the worst song they ever heard.
That is one of the worst things I've ever heard in my life. That is actually one of the worst things I've ever heard in my life, my nigga.
But if you want to see more embarrassing beefs, you can actually click one of the two videos on the screen.